Welcome everyone to Know Thy Brand podcast, the branding podcast for women in business. Welcome everybody to Know Thy Brand podcast, a podcast that tackles gender inequality through the brand lens. From brand strategies to marketing tactics, from female leadership to female entrepreneurship, from corporate brand to personal brand, every episode is designed to inspire you and to support you in a journey for success, whatever success means to you. Hello, everyone. Today with us, we have a very, very special guest, an inspiration for all social enterprises. I've been listening to Kat Lacock, since the very beginning of my journey as a social entrepreneur. And I can't believe that we have her today with us. Hi, Kat.
Hi, Julia. It's really, really good to be here. I'm really glad that you've invited me to join you on your podcast.
Thank you. Well, I invited you because I know you run a social enterprise called Share Social Impact. And I know that you provide incredible support for social entrepreneurs. If I understand correctly, particularly female social entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And I've been listening to your podcast really from day one. From the moment I decided to turn my business into a social entrepreneurship, yours was the one, the web podcast that I constantly go back to because it provides a lot of incredible insight. And so I would like just to introduce you a little bit. I'd like to introduce to our audience today, if you can tell us a bit about you, when you became a social entrepreneur. I know that this is not your first social enterprise, and what was your journey, and why did you create your latest enterprise?
Yeah, no, thank you. And thank you for the lovely warm welcome. It's always lovely to hear how people find out about me, and especially to hear that it comes through the podcast. So it's, yeah. So where did I start my journey? So I started as a social entrepreneur in 2013 when me and my friend Jen Bourne were given a really amazing opportunity to actually take over an existing organization that was not for profit and very much dependent on grant funding and turn it into a social enterprise. So the board at the time were kind of looking to close the business, and we just happened to have a really great conversation at the right time with them. They wanted to see the program that they ran continue. So it was not what we were expecting at all. And we went and had a conversation with them. We were just interested to learn from them. But they basically offered for us to take the program and kind of with new blood and ideas and insights around social entrepreneurship and reinvigorate it, I suppose, as a social enterprise. We did that with support from the CEO at the time of the organization for 12 months. She allowed us to sort of shadow her and experience the program and kind of develop the organization as we went, as we kind of tied up. So I was finishing my master's at the time, part-time. I was working part-time, and also my friend Jen was working as well. So we were able to kind of transition in a really great natural way. These opportunities don't come every day, and so we were like, this is incredible that we've been given this opportunity. It was very scary, but we decided to go all in with it. So by the summer of 2014, we were both on board as directors. All the other directors had left, bar one of them, and we had this new vision of how we were going to turn it into a profitable, sustainable social enterprise, which was through selling the program to corporates and kind of generate and selling a service or from the program that corporates wanted to buy into to enable the program to be delivered. So the organization Solutions for the Planet, for anybody who wants to have a look it up, we're still going. You can just check that out on the internet. You'll get it, solutionsfortheplanet.co.uk. And essentially it's an education program in secondary schools with 11 to 14 year olds here in the UK, helping young people develop their own entrepreneurial skills, but with a focus on the green economy and sustainability and solving, you know, our biggest social and environmental issues of the day, whether that's local, you know, regional or global, the kids decide. And then essentially, if anybody's familiar with Dragon's Den, it's kind of an extended Dragon's Den program throughout the academic year. And our corporates are heavily involved by providing mentors, alongside our team of educators supporting the kids to develop their business ideas and solutions to sustainability problems. So that was my first step into social entrepreneurship. Before that, I'd spent 7 or 8 years in the not-for-profit sector, in charities and community organisations, setting up and running and designing various different community cohesion-based programmes. Here in the UK, a lot of that was around sort of, certainly the funding was from like sort of the Preventing Violent Extremism funding, but I was really much focused on the interfaith engagement, dialogue and community cohesion. So that's kind of my background from there. Mm-hmm. So I'd always experienced applying for grant funding and securing grant funding to kind of maintain the projects and programs and organizations that I was working on and leading. And then I came to social entrepreneurship through Jen, really, who introduced me to the whole concept of what it was. And it really spoke to me because of the challenges I had faced and understood were becoming increasingly apparent for the not-for-profit sector in being grant dependent, and kind of certainly here in the UK, but I think this is the case globally, that, you know, grant funding was becoming more and more challenging to secure because there were so many more causes and organizations out there applying for things. There's so much more competition, but also there's a lot of restrictions when you're reliant on grant funding. And so social entrepreneurship provided this real great idea for me in terms of, well, this is a great way for us to do good and create the change we wanted to see in the world, but with a much more sustainable business model. So that's kind of the start of my journey. And then since then, I'm still involved in Solutions for the Planet, but I stepped away 4 or 5 years ago in the operational sense to pursue my current venture, Share Impact, to really take things to the next level for me in terms of how I wanted to support the social entrepreneurship sector more generally from what I'd learned being an operational director at Solutions for the Planet.
Fantastic, thank you. And I love that you touched on the first thing I really would like to talk about today. Because when I talk with social entrepreneurs or people who want to become social entrepreneurs, there is a lot of confusion between charity, nonprofit, and social enterprise. And then we arrive at a point where we talk about profit, the fact that social entrepreneurship is actually profitable. And there are two words in the world of social entrepreneurship that seems to be like a taboo, which are profit and sales. Yeah. It seems that we cannot talk about profit. We're not supposed to make profit because we are here to help the world, but that's actually the opposite. That's not how social enterprise work. Social enterprises work in a way that the more profit you do, the more you invest into the company, into your cause, and so the bigger is your impact. So if you were to talk, when you talk with your clients and the people that you support, and the question of profit comes through, so what are your how do you approach profit, and what are your suggestions for a social entrepreneur in terms of how to consider, how to talk, and how to realize profit?
Yeah, okay. So I love this topic, as you know, Julia. I'm really glad you asked this question. And there's so much in here. But to start with, I would go back to that point you said, that for me, social enterprise is a movement of people who want to be doing business in a different way, that want to put purpose and social environmental needs and mission at the heart of what they do. And change the way we deliver business and do and run businesses. So traditionally, businesses have their main purpose is to generate profit for shareholders. I'm not saying that they never create social good, although they don't have a positive impact and they don't obviously create products and services that we need. They do. But fundamentally, and even more so, I think over the last 40 to 50 years, businesses have been much more focused on generating as much profit as possible, because their shareholders are requiring that and demanding that.
Yes.
And I have a problem with that for all sorts of reasons that we probably haven't got time to go into. I can definitely share a link of something that I did interviewed somebody on
Please do.
Fair Trade Organization that was really, really insightful about why that is problematic. In the simplest, and I really like reluctant to say this in the simplest terms, but in the simplest terms, that's what creates our global inequality and inequality in all of our societies, is the rich getting richer and the poorest getting poorer, and the gulf in between, in the most simplest terms. And I'm not okay with that. And I know most of your listeners won't be okay with that. Exactly. We want to be changing the way the world is, our societies are. And also, you know, the key part as well for most social entrepreneurs is that we're actually looking at ways to sustain our planet as well. So for me, social entrepreneurship is a movement. It's an ethos. It's a different way of doing business where, simply put, we put purpose front and center, first and foremost.
Absolutely.
That's why we exist. That's what our aims are. That's how we make decisions in our business, is always based on that core mission and what we're trying to achieve to create positive social and environmental change. However, what often gets missed because of that focus and our passion and our commitment to create that change is that we are still enterprises. We're still businesses, and we're still there to be entrepreneurial. And that core to the social enterprise mission and movement is, I think, that we are still profitable businesses, because actually the definition all over the world about social enterprise is that the difference between a social enterprise and any other type of business is that you create profits, but for the purpose of putting that back into your social or environmental purpose, to create more impact, to create more positive change in the world, not to go to private shareholders, stakeholders, or owners of the business per se. And there are caveats around that, because sometimes, you know, even here in the UK, it depends on your governance structure, but there's often a limit to how much shareholders can take out, because there has to be at least 50% of the profits going to the purpose. So I think we often forget this as social entrepreneurs, because we're good altruistic people and we're focused on that commitment to create purpose and change, and we're often very embedded in the issues that we're trying to tackle, and we're not in it to create profit. However, the profit is essential and core to enabling the mission and the purpose to happen. Why? Because if we're only ever at break-even point, which happens with most traditional not-for-profit organizations or charities, there's no space and capacity for growth, expansion, i.e. increasing our impact, developing the way we work, investing in our staff, you know, research and development, any of that. There's just no scope for that. So I think profit's really essential for us to being a viable business, but so that we can create more purpose and impact. That makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And I couldn't agree more. That's absolutely right. I saw it. Like, you know, as you know, I transitioned from a traditional business to a social enterprise. And if I just keep doing operations I used to, yeah, I will be, and but focusing on social, on the social business, I will be fine, but I will not grow my impact. Mm-hmm. I need to grow my profit, because that in that way I can expand the reach of my impact. And it's very important to remember this. It's not, we are not greedy. There is not, by saying I want to make more profit, I'm not saying I'm a greedy person, I want to become rich out of this. It's the opposite. It's just that I'm very passionate, I believe in what I want to achieve, and I'm conscious of the fact that if I don't generate more profit, my reach will be still very limited. And now some people might decide that's fine for them, that's okay, but I think when you jump and create a social enterprise, really what motivates you is to have a strong impact. So yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
And I'd also add, Julia, as well, that it's okay for us, and it's not greedy for us as social enterprise leaders and anybody being employed in a social enterprise, to be paid well, to be paid market rate, if not above market rate, for the work that they're doing, because we are changing the status quo and changing the way we do things. We are often the innovators and the change makers making the world a better place. And that might sound really cliche, but I'm really passionate about recognizing that just because we're doing good doesn't mean we should be at the bottom of the salary ladder. Like, it doesn't make any logical sense to me.
I agree with you. And actually, you inspire me in one of your podcasts, as telling you, I don't think I've skipped one of your but one that made a very good comparison, and is, in the same way we are moving away from buying cheap clothes, because we know that cheap clothes are made basically exploiting people and, you know, and the natural resources, by agreeing in being paid too little, effectively we are doing the same thing. We mm-hmm. are exploited by our own customers, and that's not right, because we are trying to change the system, the system, the real system, how economy works.
Yeah.
And so I think that example is yours. So I'm quoting you. but I think it really resonated with me. It was in a time where actually I was making a pitch for a client, and it was just at the right time I arrived at that inspiration.
Yeah. And I think it's hard to accept that there's a lot of exploitation that goes on in the social enterprise sector, but it's true. And I see it all the time. And as leaders, we allow that to happen. In all sorts of different ways, and it shouldn't be allowed. Like, we should be okay with earning good salaries doing the work that we do, because we're well skilled, well educated, trained, we've got really valuable lived experience that matters and is important. And like I said, we're creating the changes that need to happen in society that those other people that are getting paid well to do the jobs that they're doing aren't creating in lots of situations, or are making the situation worse. And we have to take the responsibility as leaders to shift that. And so we have to acknowledge, and so there's lots of social enterprises that do this brilliantly, but I think on the whole, especially if you're just starting up or in the very first few years of social enterprise, there's this real kind of dilemma in our heads and the mindset that we have, because of traditionally, particularly charity workers, often being paid lower, or, you know, not having the income streams to generate that. And there's always been this trade-off of, you know, and this is a very traditional patriarchal model, but like leaving university and then making a decision, well, do I go and do good work and get paid less, or do I go corporate and get paid what I'm deserved, like what I deserve, sorry. So I think that for me is a shift we have to make. That shouldn't be a decision that anybody has to make. Like, we should all be inspired to do great work and be paid well for the great work that we're doing, at whatever level we are operating at in our social enterprises.
I fully agree. And also, you know, I work with university, I work with young people, and I would like to get more and more young people to support me in my business. But I don't want to take people and not being able to pay them what they would be paid if we're going to a corporate. What I'm offering them is exactly what you say. You know, shoes, you can work with me, and yes, we're going to change the world, but hey, you cannot pay the mortgage, or you can go with the other guys and you will have the money to pay the mortgage, get married, or whatever you want to do. And it's not fair. So I agree with you. As leaders, it's our responsibility to change the system. But to get there, there is a little other obstacle.
Which is there is.
Big taboo in the world of social enterprises. That I know you're quite passionate about as well, and is sales. Because again, as a social entrepreneur, okay, I agree in principle I should make a profit. I understand that, but then I really don't like to do the sales. I'm not a salesperson. I feel like fake if I go. I don't know, all of these concerns that might be at the forefront of a social entrepreneur. Can you share with us? I know you covered that in your courses, so I don't want you to give us too much, but maybe just two or three tips how a social entrepreneur should think about sales. How should they approach sales in a way that is natural and genuine to them, but still generating profit that the company needs?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing, though, as well, just to start with before we get to the sales side of things, is the pricing.
Okay.
And knowing that your profit comes through how you price. So your price should be all the cost, the full cost of what it costs to deliver your product or service, plus a profit margin. You can decide what that profit margin is, and there's all sorts of different ways to calculate that and kind of decide what's best for you in terms of the revenue that you want to generate. But it's really important that you're pricing yourself appropriately to generate the revenue and profit that you need through the sales approach that you take. Because without the right pricing structure, it might take a very long time, or you might never get to where you want to go get to revenue wise, regardless of how many products or services you sell. Because and just a very quick tutorial on pricing. So there's, you know, you can price to break even, or you can price to make a profit, and it's just a choice in your business. And I think we should always be pricing to make a profit. And the reason I say that, and you know, there's all sorts of different ways to decide on pricing, but for the reasons we've said about generating profit previously, there is no reason other than the reason in your head that's probably false why you shouldn't be charging the same or more than your non-social enterprise competitors. Because if you're delivering the same service or product, the quality and the added value of the social impact that you create does cost more usually to deliver. So there's an actual cost implication, but it's also of greater value to to your customers if they recognize that, which absolutely is required. And so, and I had a conversation with somebody this morning who was, you know, similar to you in one sense, they're a marketing business. And they said, well, we just don't feel like we can charge the same as some of our, you know, equivalents in the not so. I was like, but you're delivering the same and more, you know, and you're very clear on the impact you're creating. They were specifically working with young people. And so why would you be charging less? Exactly. Like, it doesn't make logical. I mean, take the emotion out of it. It doesn't make logical sense. So pricing, we have this idea that because we're doing good, or because we're like a charity in some respects and we're creating social impact, we should charge less. But there's no logical reason for that. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make, when you spell it out, it doesn't. Yeah, sorry, doesn't, when you spell it out, it doesn't make any sense. When you say it that way, it's like, why would you do that? But then we find ourselves in that position. It's kind of something we do ourselves.
So be okay with charging what you need, what you're worth. What it actually costs and a bit more to deliver what you need to deliver. And if you're unsure about how to convince, which is often what people say to me, how do I convince customers though that this is an okay price? And I was like, you don't need to convince anybody for a start. You just need to be more confident in the amazing work that you do. And the way I suggest people do that is go back deep to why do they do this? What is the impact they create? Why are they doing this particular work, and what is the benefits for society, the environment, and their customers? Okay, and it's okay to price whatever you need to price to make your business work so that you can deliver the impact that you want to deliver. So pricing is really key, and then sales. And we have all the similar mindset issues come up with sales as well. And one of the first things I say is, probably just forget everything you've ever thought or learned about sales or experienced with sales, and go back to your values and say, right, if we're running, you'll run most of your social enterprise based on your mission and your values. You'll make decisions every day about how you operate and all of that. And for some reason, when it comes to sales, we forget that and go back to traditional models of what we think selling is all about. And we instantly feel uncomfortable with it because we have all these kind of stories in our head about what salespeople are like and how sales is done. And it's very icky and manipulative and pushy and pressured. And I've got to convince people and persuade people. And sales doesn't have to be like that. It can be like that. You can make that decision. And if you want to have sales approach like that in your business, then go for it. Like, that's fine. There's no police around it, unfortunately. But I think for most social entrepreneurs, you want to feel authentic, you want to feel real, and you want to operate your business in a really humanistic approach and way, which is based on your values. So go back to your values and say, if I embedded my values in the way I approach people and attract people and sell, what would my sales strategy look like? How do I create a sales strategy that looks fully aligned to who we are as a business, a brand, and our values? And it completely reframes things, because actually you start to think about, well, I certainly don't want to be manipulative. Okay, so we won't be manipulative. How do we change the way we think about selling to people by not being manipulative? And some of the key things I say here is, A, recognize that there are always people out there who are ready and willing to pay for what you have to offer. If you know the value and you can communicate that value to them, there are people out there waiting, like literally waiting to see your offer and ready to give you their bank details and pay for it. And if you start from that place and focus on those people, there is no need for manipulation or persuasion because they're ready.
Absolutely.
There may be people, and there's also, I'm going to show you a book, but we're not on video, so that's not going to be very helpful for a podcast. I've just started reading a really great book about that specifically, or maybe we can put this in the show notes, but Sell Well, Do Good by Roy Whitten and Scott Roy. It's on my desk. And which is really about like helping people make a decision. Like, is the decision, is the purchase right for them? And I think this is really valuable for social entrepreneurs, which is what they talk about in their book, is we don't have to persuade people, because if it's not right for them, they're not our customers, and we should not focus on them. So stop trying to convince people that don't need your stuff. Like, A, create products and services that are needed and wanted, or that get people results that they want and need. And then stop trying to sell to people that don't want it. Like, and move on and try and find people that do want it.
Oh, you don't know how much I love this, because when, you know, I'm a brand strategist, and all we start from, everything you said so far really fits in what we're trying to embed in, you know, in to explain to our members, because we have members here, and which is very much about find out what makes you unique, because is that what people buy? You know, you don't have to convince anyone. Go back to your, what are your values? Why are you bringing? Why are you here in business? And even before that, the first step is there a need for what you want to do? because if there is no need, maybe if you might have a great idea, you need to shift it a bit. Or maybe it's already covered by other people, so maybe you need to find your niche. You know, if there are, absolutely, you're absolutely right. So when I start talking about branding, I always say, know your market. So know what is happening out there, and if there is a need, know your audience, what they're looking for, because then when you define what you need, what you offer, then it all comes naturally together, and then you need to embed it in everything you do. And sales is one of the things. It's not the only thing. It's the operation, it's in the hiring process, and it's in, you know, the customer service, in everything. But sales is very much one of those aspects of your business that needs to reflect what your brand stands for. Yeah. So I can't thank you enough for mentioning this, because, you know,
No problem. Can I share two other things, Julia, that I think are really important around this topic, particularly for social entrepreneurs that maybe are generating their income from doing other activities that maybe isn't their core social impact work? So maybe you're running programs or projects with particular beneficiaries or communities, and you want to fund that from other sales activity that you do. And so if it's for simple, you know, from my experience as well, maybe you're selling to corporates some training or consultancy to generate the income and profit you need to put into the social impact piece of work that you're doing. If that's the case, what you're doing and your kind of your organizational needs and desires and wants for delivering that program are important, but might not be the only reason why a corporate would come on board and pay you. So you have to go out and explore, what do corporates need that we can meet? And part of it might be your social impact, absolutely. And I think more and more corporates are coming on board because they want to procure and buy services from social enterprises, which is brilliant. But they also probably want a business need met too. And so knowing what your customers want and need is really key to being able to tailor, market and develop your particular services for them, rather than just thinking that you can say, well, look, we're doing great work, don't you want to pay for it? Lots of social enterprises do. And it's like, well, yes, we do, but we also want something back for us. And it's not because if you understand how other businesses work, whether they're a social enterprise or not, otherwise it is them just giving you a donation. Exactly. And I think there has to be an energy and a reciprocal exchange of, no, we're providing a service and we want you to pay for it so that we can go and do our great work. And we hope that great work is of added value to you. But we also want to meet a business need for you. And I think it's just a slight tweak for social enterprises to get their head around, which sometimes is missed. And the other thing which lots of people ask me is, how do we deliver services for free when our customers can't afford to pay? So really good question. And I think it's really important to get the distinction between beneficiaries and customers. So for some social enterprises, they have very clear distinctions. They have beneficiaries and then they have customers and clients. But for some social enterprises currently, their beneficiaries are their customers. Or maybe they can know their customers' beneficiaries don't actually pay. So if your beneficiaries are your customers currently, you don't have any other customers, and you need and want to be able to offer your services or products for free to those beneficiaries, you have to know that, you know, unless you're grant dependent, which is fine and it's a choice, but it's not ideal as a social enterprise, you need to find other income sources. and therefore you need to find other customers who can pay for those services or other services so that you can put the profit back into your work that you do with beneficiaries. So I just wanted to like add that in because it's a common question that I get asked.
I think it's a very good point. I think that the distinction beneficiaries and customers or clients really helps to be more clear. I'm a big fan of using words in the right way. Using the right words actually helps clarify a lot of concepts.
Absolutely.
So, thank you very much for this. I think it is something that a lot of social enterprises will find useful for when they define their business model and how to generate the profit that they need to generate the impact they want to generate. Well, thank you so much. I have just the one final question that I ask to everybody because, you know, I'm passionate about brands. And I love this question because every time I receive a different answer and something very interesting. So I would like to ask you, what is one brand that you like and why? And can be any type of brand and doesn't need to be social engineering, but why? What's the most important thing?
I'm going to talk about one of my clients.
Okay.
Who I love. So I love all my clients, obviously. Just one pops into my head in particular, who I think is brilliant. So Hip Hip Hooray, they're called, and they're based here in the UK, down in Devon, in Tavistock. I think that's the right county. Hopefully, otherwise I've offended a lot of people, but hopefully that's fine. And Jenny Ajene, who is the founder of Hip Hip Hooray, and they basically came to me and they wanted to, like, similar to you, Julia, in that they had a really successful family-run business of wedding stationery. So they created invitations, and so they did a lot of printing and design for brides and other sort of occasions that had been going for a good almost 10 years, I think. But Jenny really wanted to change things up. She felt a bit lost, like, in her business, and was like, I don't have this passion that I used to have for the work and stuff. And so she's turned it into a social enterprise, exactly the same name. Her background was in probation and working with women, and so she's built her mission into this business and really, like, transformed it into something really unique and amazing, which is still has all the core products and lots of new products and stuff around her client base, which is weddings and brides, and creating amazing stationery for weddings, but that also then enables her to employ women who have faced multiple disadvantage, who have maybe left the prison service, have overcome addiction, all sorts of other things that they're facing, multiple sort of disadvantage, to get back into the workplace, and then provide further support, training and mentoring as well for them to go on after their year working with them. And why do I love this brand? Because they have a brilliant visual brand, which I think is fantastic, but they also now have this really amazing mission that doesn't necessarily easily align, but is really exciting how it can bring along the story of women who are facing real disadvantage and struggle in their life and want to move forward through the employment program, and women who are like at a point in their lives where they're sort of celebrating and kind of having, you know, hopefully a really good time planning their wedding and kind of celebrating their new part of their life as well. And I think there's just this really nice combination of women starting a new phase of their life, whether that's marriage or, you know, coming onto this program, but who are often very different and maybe never ever meet either through the organization, but that one's enabling the other. I just love that.
I love it. And as another proof of the fact that I listen to all of your podcasts, I know them because you invited them to your podcast, and mm-hmm. their story is truly, truly inspiring. And so I really would like to invite everybody to listen to your podcast and really to find out more about the services you offer, because I think that especially as you start a social enterprise and you know, you need some help, you need some support. And I know that what you offer to your clients is something extremely valuable. I will put all of your details in the notes of the podcast, and please send me the book because I want to read it, if anything.
Yeah, no, I will do.
And so I just wanted to thank you for being with us today. Thank you so much for your invaluable insights. Really, really incredible. Thank you.
No, thank you, Julia. It's been an absolute joy sharing those. And I look forward to being in touch with others if they want to be. And looking forward to listening to more of your podcast as well, which I'm definitely going to be doing through my maternity leave.
Yeah, because you're going to take a little break. But fret not, audience, because I know this puts this system in place so that your company will still go ahead while you're in maternity. So if you need any support from Katla Cochlear team, you will still find it. So don't be shy, reach out to her because she is your woman for your social enterprise.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you. And stop.